How does a portrait make the unseen visible? Does it matter who creates the image? Can one picture inspire a movement? In 1955, Emmett Till was a young boy visiting his family from the South and was brutally murdered. After his death, his mother made the decision to send the explicit photos of his autopsy to the media, saying, "Let the world see what I've seen." I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we discuss the Civil Rights exhibit currently on display at the Wyandotte County Museum. Inside, you'll see ads from the 50s that you never see the Mad Men advertisers working on, plus memorable photographs from the Civil Rights Movement, classic video footage of black performers on the Ed Sullivan Show, and more. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Fires burning down buildings. Fire hoses used on protesters, police billy clubs and police dogs, a mother's son in a casket, dark images that brought the struggle of a people to life. Then light, families together, inspirational men and women who inspire, the vision of a people who also made us smile and laugh and think. This is Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Today we discuss a pictorial survey of our nation's history that comes in the form of the exhibit For All the World to See, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights. It's currently up at the Wyandotte County Museum in Bonner Springs. And joining us now are Leslie Sibilic, the creative director from the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and from Wyandotte County Historical Museum. We're joined by Patricia Schurkamp and Jennifer Laughlin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First, tell us a bit about this Wyandotte County Historical Museum. For folks who haven't found it yet, it's a real hidden treasure among the foliage out there in Bonner Springs. Tell us about that.
It is. We've been there for some time, actually, and it celebrates and commemorates the history of Wyandotte County, all of Wyandotte County, Bonner Springs, Kansas City. We do it through artifacts. We go back as far as 2,000 years ago and celebrate our history.
The museum goes back 2,000 years ago?
Not the museum, artifacts? The artifacts go back 2,000 years ago.
I was going to say that would be a record.
It would be. The Hopewell were very inventive. Started their own museum.
Leslie Sibilic, for all the world to see, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights, tell us about this exhibit and how this came to be.
The exhibit is part of a program for Mid-America Arts Alliance called NEH on the Road. It's a traveling exhibition program that we run in contract with the National Endowment for the Humanities. And the exhibit that is appearing at the Wyandotte County Museum is a smaller version of a larger show that was created first by the Center for Art, Visual Culture, and Design at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. And we're privileged to be able to work with them to scale it down, to kind of creatively readapt the smaller version that is perfectly sized for places like Wyandotte County and fits in small communities all across the country.
And Jennifer Laughlin, you found this exhibit through intrepid research, right?
Yes.
Tell us about your research.
The internet is a powerful tool. Yes, different traveling exhibition companies have websites that basically have catalogs of their opportunities for local museums. So I went searching last year looking for a traveling exhibition that we would be able to bring to our museum that would focus on some aspect of African-American culture, because I wanted to highlight the African-American culture within Wyandotte County. And then I stumbled upon For All the World to See, as it was still in creation. It wasn't even completed yet. So actually I got pretty lucky, to be honest.
What struck you about it?
I just found the whole idea of visual culture is so powerful. I am a visual person. I have an arts background. So the idea of how visual culture can have an impact on society is very interesting, and I think it can, you know, be interesting for different age groups, because as a museum, we have to look at things that can have an impact for children as well as adults. So it was just a good opportunity. I contacted the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and then we went from there.
And how did it go from there with the Mid-America Arts Alliance? How did the Mid-America Arts Alliance facilitate this exhibit coming to Wyandotte County Museum for the first
First stop. Yeah. Yes, it was the first stop, and we owe Wyandotte a great debt of thanks for being our guinea pig as the first stop on the tour. As Jennifer mentions, this exhibition was still clearly in production. In fact, they were lucky enough to get to see pieces of it in advance, and we also went out to their facility. We talked to them about the project and said, you know, here's what kind of material is going to be in it. Here's what you'll need to do. So we've worked with them all along, both to help them with the application process, because there's an NEH programming grant that comes along with this. So there's a little bit of paperwork you have to fill out. So we've worked with them on that and then literally helped them with the setup and installation of the actual piece, both in terms of just some of the tweaking of it, lighting and things like that, and helping them with the spacing and kind of the layout and the walkthrough in their facility.
Speaking of layouts and walkthroughs, Leslie, what is the most compelling image in this exhibit for you? Personally. And then we're going to go around and ask everybody personally, because that's what it's about.
To me, there are two pieces. And the first of them is really the centerpiece of the whole exhibit. It's probably the most difficult image in the show. And it's the one where we had some discussions back and forth. When we first picked up this project from the NEH, there were discussions about how to handle it. And it is the picture of the Emmett Till, his face in part of the casket. And it's such a horrible image in one sense, but it's also such a powerful image because it's really it's the center point around which this entire story revolves. That question of what can an image do to, in the case of this particular picture, change overnight the way that people looked at this, the way we thought, oh my God, what are we doing, and how can an image sort of highlight that? So I'd say that's one that for me is one of the most powerful ones. I also, there are a couple of enlargements that are part of it, and the detail of a scene from Birmingham with the water, the hoses and that is also one that is truly powerful. Total juxtaposition of scale from this tiny little photo of Emmett Till, because it was in Jet magazine, to kind of a wall-sized blow-up. But the scale between those says a lot about what visual images did to bring this stuff into people's homes in a way that for many of them they had never encountered it before.
Patricia Schurkamp, let's bring you in. And what are the most compelling images for you?
Well, actually, I think I'm with her on the Birmingham. That one always, just because I remember that as a child, seeing that and having a whole different perspective as to what I have today when I look at it and I think about the horror of us actually doing that to human beings. I think another image, or it's actually one of the visuals that moves, and that is the one where they're talking about, will there ever be a black president? And of course, again, when I was younger, I thought, no, a woman will be president before a black person would ever be. And who knew? Here we are today with an African-American president. So, again, we have gone forward in many respects, but I think we do have a lot of way to go yet.
Jennifer Laughlin, one of those images strike a chord today. Why did they strike a chord today?
I just think they evoke emotion. And I think that is one of the things that makes this exhibition so powerful and successful, is that especially I'm in my early 30s. And so someone of my generation, you know, we didn't grow up seeing some of these images on the nightly news. We grew up with different, you know, images, different mainstream movements, if you will. And so I think a lot of people take for granted some of the things that our nation has gone through. And for me, the Till image is definitely the most powerful. You know, I tend to be a sensitive person, and I just cannot imagine, and I'm a mother, and so I cannot imagine his mother's strength and her ability to put that forth as a part of a larger movement. I just think that is an amazing piece of our history.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Leslie Zabilik, a creative director from Mid-America Arts Alliance, along with representatives from Wyandotte County Historical Museum, Patricia Schurkamp and Jennifer Laughlin. We're discussing the exhibit For All the World to See, Visual Culture and the struggle for civil rights. Now up at the Wyandotte County Museum, we've been discussing some of the more disturbing images, such as the Emmett Till autopsy photo that was in Jet Magazine as it is on display, and the still images of people being hit with fire hoses in the Birmingham protest, and images from all across the civil rights movement, as well as good, positive images that we'll get to in a minute as well. But Kansas City, what images stick in your mind that change the way you see the world? What are the lasting images that shape your views on race relations? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard@kcur.org. One of the striking things about this exhibit, it seems, pose questions to the viewer. On these different pictures and these different video installations and these different still images, they pose questions back to the viewer. Jennifer Laughlin, tell us about some of those questions the exhibit asked, and how do you ponder them? Can the mass media, for instance, stimulate a call to action? That's one of the questions. Do you think so? Lori?
Yeah, this is Leslie. Yes. You know, I will say that for the part of Mid-America and the NEH on the Road program, I am thrilled that you enjoyed the questions, because it's really a part of the approach we've taken with these projects to encourage people to go in and say, okay, this isn't just an exhibit where I'm going to receive information, that it's a dialogue back and forth between you, the visitor, the material that's in the show. And so in this case, the questions, which were pulled out of pieces in the script and pieces in the images and the objects that are featured, are really a way indeed for you to get involved in the project. So from a question about, you know, what role does the media play in promoting positive and negative views, to a question about can an image change the course of events, it's something that we want to see as part of it. And all the way through, they've been kind of placed there to help you engage and link with different pieces of the content, pro and con. I mean, in some cases, those questions are designed to have you look at a magazine in a new way or consider a new meaning behind maybe a very familiar piece that, as Patricia was saying, you know, the meanings change over time depending on who we are as well as who people were when they were created.
I think one of the questions for me that is very powerful is actually the last question, what do you think? And people leaving their comments about what they think, what they saw, where do they think we're going? I find that fascinating because it helps us to understand as a people who and where we need to go.
What kind of comments were you getting at the end of the installation where there's a typewriter that you can allow people to type their answers, or they can write them handwritten? What were some of the comments you
Some of the comments that we've received are things like, we've come a long way, but have a long way to go. And a lot of these are from young kids, not just the visitors, you know, the older folks, but those young students that come in and are seeing changes. And I think some of the others, we had one that was really interesting. She obviously was a child of two gay parents, and was commenting about how this exhibition impacted her and how she hopes that now with her situation that we move forward looking at other rights as well. So I thought that was rather an interesting comment that was made. And we keep those and allow other visitors to see those comments.
There was also one comment, get Obama out of office, which was very interesting. Doesn't necessarily denote racism, but, you know, it's ironic that
it's a political season.
This is the thought that comes up directly after seeing all of those images. It's also interesting to see in this exhibit how the widespread use of handheld cameras by consumers for the first time in the mid-20th century helped change Black people's image of themselves. Regular people doing regular things was one of the prominent things exhibit. Talk about that and its place in our exhibit in the larger consciousness. When people had a chance to have their own cameras and document their own lives, how did that change?
I think towards the end of the exhibition, it becomes more prevalent. But, you know, as families, you know, started to have their own cameras, they were able to document their everyday lives. And so the African-American culture wasn't just seen on these large-scale movements and these negative, instances, but they were shown with their children or as family groups, as a culture, as a community. And so I think it brought, you know, a larger kind of stereotype down to the basic unit of what a family is.
And I think there's a marvelous quote that kind of fits with this section that really features the snapshots and the images from the handheld camera, where someone is talking about how, you know, within the larger world of the media, there were many times we didn't see ourselves, we didn't see our families, but within this world that we created, our lives were whole. We were as fully three-dimensional as any other people, and I think it becomes a really moving piece at the end of that, these images that we don't necessarily know who even took them all.
Mm-hmm. We're discussing the new exhibit at the Wyandotte County Museum, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights, Kansas City. What images stick in your mind that change the way you see the world, be they historical images or images of just yesterday or today or a few minutes ago in our fast-moving social media-laden society? What are the lasting images that shape your views on race relations or gender politics, whatever it may be, an image that strikes you and has a lasting impression on your worldview? Join our conversation, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email in your comments to centralstandard@kcur.org. This brings up another interesting question that was posed in the exhibit. Does it matter who is presenting the visual picture? Does it matter who's presenting the visual picture, the source of the picture? CBS News versus some guy's camera on the street. Does it matter who's disseminating the picture and how it'll be perceived?
Big question. In some ways, both yes and no. I think there are pieces within the exhibit that make the point that it doesn't have to be an agency or an important person taking the picture for the image in the sense of visual culture to be relevant. I think in terms of the voice, who's offering it up, what's the opinion that expressed, I think it does matter. And there are a number of places where we look at something where, for example, the photo content, in some cases, it's even been taken by African-American photographers, but it's linked with text that might be from a mainstream media source that at the time in the 60s, you had almost two different realities being created between the images, which were saying one thing, and the text, which tended to be much more derogatory. I think over time, one of the arguments the exhibit makes is that as African Americans begin to see the way that the media impression of these things impacts events, you begin to see a more aggressive approach by people to create some other images of their own. And as you move forward, that's when you get many of the more aggressive images from, say, the Black Panther Party, where, yeah, it not only matters, but it completely changes the kind of image you create.
There's also a shocking pictorial there, too, to balance it all out on how hate comes in all forms, of Malcolm X holding a copy of the periodical Muhammad Speaks, White Devil's Time is Almost Up. How does that strike you?
Well, I think, again, when you were talking about whether it doesn't matter who's taking the images, and again, that one I think is a good example. It does. You know, I think historically you have to look at both sides if you want to get an accurate picture of anything. You can't just pick up the Kansas City Star and think that what they're reporting is the only news, or CBS is the only news. If you really want to know the truth, I've always said you have to look at both sides, and somewhere in the middle is the truth. And I think that, again, with those images, that image in itself, it's important whether it's African-American taking it or a white person taking it, but what is the perspective? Look at both and find that center. And I think that's what you have to do when you're looking at these images, is realizing there was two stories, and you have to look at both sides to understand it. And you never, ever look at history with today's eyes. You have to look at it. When you're looking at these images, you have to remember that you're looking at images from 1950, 1960, and what is happening in the culture and why is it happening. Otherwise, you could walk in with a lot of anger and not understand what you're actually seeing. And I think that that's very important as well.
Not looking at it with today's eyes.
Not looking at it. You can't look at it with today's eyes.
This exhibit is truncated and made to suit the spatial dimensions of the Wyandotte County Museum, as well as, you know,
other
small institutions as well. How did you decide what to leave in image-wise and what to leave out? How did that decision-making process come together?
In many respects, it's almost like, I think one of the analogies I tend to use sometimes is taking a novel, taking a much larger piece and adapting it to a screenplay where you're making decisions about those episodes and elements that absolutely cannot be left out of the story. We did this in concert with the originating curator, Dr. Maurice Berger, who's with the Center for Art, Design, and Visual Culture in Maryland. He was part of the guiding force behind kind of identifying the pieces that were most crucial to the story as he had told it, not only in this exhibition, but in the larger piece. And I think what we also do, because the nature of this program is to reach smaller communities like Wyandotte and give them places where they can jump off and explore these stories in their own community, we also use that question of what elements are going to be locally relevant to kind of suggest where we place an emphasis here, what we do there, what are the stories of the general people involved with this, what are those things where local venues can also find ways to expand that and tell the stories of their own communities, because honestly, that's really where it's going to make a difference and reach this community.
And of course, that spawns the question that's posed in the exhibit itself. How do you portray the complexity of a people? And how do you answer that question in this context?
I think in some ways, Patricia hit on a little piece of it in her answer about the media, that you have to look at it from all sides. You can never just take one depiction of a people. You have to know both how they're depicted from multiple viewpoints and then how we see ourselves from within. I think it's one of the biggest challenges of history that there's always a piece that is unwritten, that's maybe in a way even unknowable. But if you take things from as many sides as possible and look at as many kind of perspectives, you'll get the fullest possible picture.
A lasting truth about this exhibit and the images of racial injustices in the era, that these injustices weren't real until they came into people's living rooms or came across people's newspapers. Talk about the role of the visual medium in bringing these realities to life.
I think the visual media is an extremely powerful source of information. Whether you're, in 1960, you're looking at television or a radio, or you're looking at, a print, or today looking at it on the internet, where you're getting it so much faster. And I think, unfortunately, you're not necessarily getting more of the story, you're getting less because it has to move so fast. But it certainly allows you an opportunity to bring issues quickly to somebody's mind. And hopefully then those who are looking at it, again, will go back and look at other areas and try to put a story together and understand it better so that we can move forward. I think that's one of the most important parts of this exhibit. It's not just something you walk through and walk out and go, wow, that was powerful. I hope when people go through it, they go out and they go, wow, that's powerful. Now where do we need to go and what do we need to do to continue fighting for all rights, not just one particular issue, but all rights, and making this, making the United States a very powerful state.
Our guests are Leslie Sibilla, Creative Director of the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and from the Wyandotte County Historical Museum. We're joined by Director Patricia Schurkamp and Curator Jennifer Laughlin. We've been discussing the exhibit now on display at the Wyandotte County Museum called For All the World to See, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, a discussion of some of the uglier images in our history and the feelings they evoke, plus a look at the local images that shaped our vision here in the Metro. Meanwhile, Kansas City, what images stick in your mind that made you change the way you see the world? What are the lasting images that shape your views on race relations? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The image of Emmett Till's lifeless body after he was shot, lynched, and thrown in a river is one that still sends chills down your spine even today. His mother, Mabel Till Mobley, said of the picture, "We had averted our eyes for far too long, turning away from the ugly reality facing us as a nation. Let the world see what I've seen." These and other images are currently on display at an exhibit for all the world to see, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights, at the Wyandotte County Museum. Joining us for this continued discussion about the exhibit and lasting images in the media are Leslie Zabilik, creative director for the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and from the Wyandotte County Historical Museum, where the exhibit is housed, we're joined by Patricia Schurkamp and Jennifer Laughlin. There are also less grotesque but equally disturbing images than the Emmett Till, but in the person of Aunt Jemima or the letter opener in the shape of a crocodile with a black baby in his mouth. These aren't TV images or photographs, but they're there. Why is it important for people to see these non-mass media images as well?
The items you're mentioning, indeed, they're not photos. They are early pop culture items. They're all, for the most part, in an early section of the exhibition. And we felt that it was really crucial for people to understand the context out of which the visual culture images stemmed and from where they started, where the set of Aunt Jemima syrup pitchers and salt and pepper shakers were just an extremely common set of kitchen furnishings that even today, you know, when we were looking even for acquiring those materials for the exhibit, go to the local antique stores. I guarantee you, you're going to see at least one or two examples from that set in almost any antique store in the area. Profoundly common. And I think for us, it was a way to remind people of here's where this started, that there was an underlying sense of it's okay within the larger culture that defines how the kind of rest of the story begins to take shape.
There's also a local component to this pictorial survey in Wyandotte County. Tell us about some of those images, Jennifer Laughlin, and
what they show. Sure. Within the Wyandotte County Historical Museum, we have a vast archives of historical photographs, newspapers, different things from our county history. And I utilized our local resources to parallel the national exhibition. And, you know, one that was really striking for me is, I mean, you hear about the iconic images of business doors that say whites only, but actually seeing it in an actual photograph from our city on Kansas Avenue to me was very powerful. Also seeing the marches after Martin Luther King was assassinated that took place in downtown Kansas City, Kansas. You know, these are all images that, you know, again, with the local business, you know, that might not have been on a greater scale. But then the marches, those were national. Those, you know, and people, you know, depending on your age, you might remember seeing that in the newspaper or seeing that on the news. So I think it's important to bring a local perspective to make you question and remember, you know, if you were alive at that time period, you know, what we have gone through.
These are stark, fresh images to you as you were putting together as a curator.
Correct.
But Patricia Schurkamp, you lived it.
I lived it. I well remember when Martin Luther King Jr. was killed and was held back from school, was not allowed to go because of the race riots that were occurring mostly in Kansas City, Missouri. But we did have them, as she said, in Kansas City, Kansas. And I was not allowed to go to school. I do remember being in an all-white neighborhood and the first African-American family moving in and happened to move in right next door to us. And the uproar in the neighborhood, it was just a horrible thing. And these were very good, upstanding people. So I do remember these things. I do remember seeing it and hearing it.
Is there anything in this exhibit, Leslie, that you hadn't seen before that you saw for the first time? And how did it change your perception or worldview?
I think a number of things. One, just the impact in general, in terms of changing my worldview, you know, the impact of the early black press magazines, which, you know, growing up were not necessarily a part of my family's reading. So that was something that in a small piece was very new. I have to say, too, that the later imagery, the Black Panther posters, the newspapers, that sort of appropriation in an entirely different way, to me that was also very powerful. But I think that it was the Emmett Till image and maybe some of the other images that in one sense I was more familiar with that changed my perspective as much as we were talking about before. I mean, you grow up with a TV show like Good Times and you take it for granted. Oh, that's funny. That's what it meant. You come back and you understand it in a totally different way. And it helps kind of increase your critical ability to watch, whether it's a TV show or look at the coverage, especially online now, and say, okay, what's the point of view behind that?
And that's the thing. The context changes when you see the image differently each time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the Birmingham such a great example. And even today, I mean, when I saw that the first time, being much younger, it was just like, well, okay. It didn't really, you know, didn't have the same perspective that it has today when I walk past that image. Even every time in the museum when I walk past that image, I literally stop and look at it and just think to myself, what were we thinking? What were we doing? These are human beings.
We're discussing the traveling exhibit For All the World to See, Visual Culture and the Struggle for Civil Rights, now up at the Wyandotte County Museum. Some stark images of the history and a survey of American history along with civil rights history and African-American history. Kansas City, what images stick in your mind that change the way you see the world? What are the lasting images from childhood or from now, maybe yesterday, maybe instantaneously as you're listening to this? What are the images that shape your views on race relations and how you see the world? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also join in at Central Standard at kcur.org. And we have a slideshow on Facebook. Melissa on Facebook says she was struck by the Gordon Parks' photos. She visited his grave in Fort Scott, Kansas. There's a large installation of Gordon Parks at this exhibit, which offer some of the more positive images, which offer hope. Jennifer?
Again, I think it plays back to looking at the perspective and who took the image, who presented the image. Again, Gordon Parks was a famous African-American photographer. So if you look at it with the perspective of here is an African-American man taking photographs and presenting a culture, they're going to be positive images because that's his culture, that's his family, that's him. So I think that it's as important to see those positive images as to see the negative images of the race riots and the till image.
And what we highlight, too, is should be noted that Gordon Parks did take pictures of white people, Indians, Chinese people, American life documented through the eyes of a black photographer, which is also an interesting aspect.
And
of this.
Indeed, in the case of Gordon Parks, there's an example of it was so difficult to just pick a few of his images that were, you know, particularly relevant to this project. He has such a gorgeous body of work. You know, he's a photographer from Kansas. That was one of those where we're like, oh no, you know, can we just include one more? So a wonderful example where there's something you could take a whole other chapter and look at his work.
You're right, that could be
someone
an exhibit
who is looking,
oh,
most definitely,
as looking for the dignity and the value of all people. So it's a great example.
I was just, don't you think though too? What I take away from it is that when you're going around, you're seeing almost them. This happened to them. This happened to them. It's like two different cultures, two different peoples. And then you get to his and it's like, oh, we're all the same.
Here we are. Mm-hmm.
We're all the same. Yeah, it's us.
Mara, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
Hello.
There are two images that I find pretty disturbing. And one is from the past and one is from the present. Something from the past that I find strange is it seems like when I was young, I'm 43, that you would see, and now I have seen it in documentaries, African Americans painted as kind of almost the boogeyman almost. And then you see images of today, and I find them even more disturbing, and I can't imagine finding it disturbing back in my time, or why people painted African Americans that way. And one image that sticks in my mind is a photograph of the man who was molested at the school. He was the man, the football playing coach. I saw that image recently on AOL, and I thought, now there's the face of evil, in my opinion. Now, how those images back in my time, my early times, could have been painted evil compared to that is beyond me. And from current time that I find evil, or that I find troubling, I shouldn't say evil, is I don't know if you remember from the first of the year, the senator from Arizona that went out on the tarmac to President Obama and stuck her finger in his face. I cannot imagine going to the President of the United States, no matter who you are, and going up to him and putting your finger in his face if he were white. I can't imagine doing that to a white, a black, a red, a yellow, whatever.
Whatever, indeed. And we want to know whatever are the images that stick in your mind and change the way you see the world. Thank you for your thoughts, Mara. What are the lasting images that shape your views on race relations? Join the conversation, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're talking about visual imagery in the context of a new exhibit at Wyandotte County Museum for all the world to see, visual culture and the struggle for civil rights. Joe Louise in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, a very interesting program. Several images that I have is one, the swearing in of President Obama. I will always remember that. And also a little disturbing was the beating of Rodney King by the police out in California. And another one, the last one, would be when the people were seemed like stranded and begging for help after the flood, a storm of Katrina.
Thank you very much for those stark images. We just recently celebrated the 20th anniversary of the Los Angeles riots, rebellion, whatever you want to call it, depending on your perception in vision of the Rodney King beating that was fully on videotape. And also Katrina reminds us of some stark images of people on rooftops. What are those images sort of burn into your consciousness about the direction of our country? Because we think about these images in terms of the civil rights era and the dogs and fire hoses and ancient times. But he's mentioning Katrina, Rodney King, more modern. What do you think about whether or not things have changed? Which is one of the key questions that the exhibit asks in and of itself. Patricia?
Has it changed? I think we have made some progress, especially within the media. Unfortunately, I still think there's an us versus them mentality. No matter what the culture, it's still us versus them. And unfortunately, until we get rid of that idea and understand that we are just people, all of us looking for the same thing, all of us wanting to live by Maslow's law, we're not going to ever fully change. We'll always have the us versus them.
We're talking about imagery that strikes a lasting impression. Denise in Edgerton, Missouri, welcome to Central Standard. Denise?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for taking my call.
All right.
I am a white woman. I live here now. I spent many years in New Hampshire raising my own children. In New Hampshire, they have a very, very northern view of black history. During Black History Month, I would dress in theatrical makeup, wood costume, everything, and present Aunt Sadie, who was a nanny and housekeeper for white slave plantation owners.
You played Aunt Sadie, or you presented?
No, I did. Yeah, I did.
You dressed up. You dressed up. Did you dress up in blackface?
Yes, I did, and articulated the appropriate accent as best I could, and presented it in schools all over New Hampshire during Black History Month.
And how was that received up in New Hampshire?
Well, I pretty well knocked their socks off because I presented it from a Southern point of view. And they weren't ready to hear that, you know, the North wasn't white, you know, supreme and right. And but they kept asking me to come back.
Wow.
So, but the one image that I presented to the children that I'm hoping impacted them, it did me, was a construct of what the layout of a slave ship looked like.
Right.
With the bodies toe-to-toe, head-to-toe, I mean, just crammed.
The lasting image of the slave ship with
exactly.
The sort of spoon.
And, yeah. And of all the questions asked, I believe I received more questions about that picture. And well, how did they move? How did they go to the? How did they do? And it's like they didn't. They stayed right there.
That's definitely a stark image. Thank you for telling us about that, Denise, and giving us a clue on how they do it up in New Hampshire with the very colorful performances that they have up there. Speaking of which, this exhibit sort of brings to the fray, is it appropriate for white people to present Black history? That's an interesting question. I think it's a fair question, but it is American history.
It is American history. I think there are arguments made. I mean, even there was at the Tivoli earlier this year, you know, the film with the filmmaker who's walked across the country advocating the abolishment of Black History Month.
We had him on our show.
Yeah, yep. I mean, saying that, you know what, it's not about a month. It's about all of our history. And it is a legitimate question. I can't think that every part of the country might have that same approach to classroom performance, as the caller mentioned. I think there's also a question of intent there. But yeah, I mean, there have to be a number of different strategies for interpreting those stories and conveying the fact that this is part of a consistent national heritage. As Patricia was saying, how do you get past that us versus them mentality both ways? I mean, it's one of those things where someone like Gordon Parks, who kind of took this focused view on the richness of all people, can maybe help with that a little bit.
You know, when I was in college, I had a male instructor who taught women's history. And when I took the class, I thought, how in the heck is he going to stand up there and tell me, as a woman, my history? But I think if you present not only his perspective of how he saw women's history, but he had other female speakers come in and present. That's what you have to do, and that's what we've tried to do with our programming, is have African-American speaker come in and talk about the history of Wyandotte County and a certain community so that you highlight both.
And I think one of the goals behind a project like this, a hope behind bringing this exhibition to different communities, is it would encourage places to bring in a multiple set of viewpoints, multiple voices participating in what should be a conversation, not, you know, one person delivering all the facts.
What we just heard about the Blackface New Hampshire performance was an example of a well-intentioned viewpoint being shown up in New Hampshire, where I'm sure there aren't a whole lot of Black people, but I'm sure they could have found one to depict a Black maid. You
know, speaking from that perspective of local history, where you might be challenged on who your speakers are.
Right.
You're right. Well-intentioned. I think there is that dangerous other side. We were talking about the pieces like Aunt Jemima and, you know, those what to some now would seem like a very negative and to others, oh, just a more minor character. They're coming out of that whole tradition of black-faced minstrel show where there were much more ugly stereotypes being portrayed. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit difficult to kind of balance those two visions.
Certainly. Beth writes that in regard to Clarence Thomas, the Clarence Thomas hearing, she remembers seeing the well-educated professional Black witnesses sitting opposite the congressional panel. It made her realize, as a white person, being fed images of only drug dealers and welfare mothers shaped and formed her views. What do you think of that?
Absolutely.
What do you think of that comment?
I think she's right. Unfortunately, again, it goes back to who's presenting it and how it's being presented. And it does shape our view if we look at it in that perspective and what's being brought forward. If all you're going to hear is, you know, I think one of the things, just kind of back up a little bit, one of the things we're constantly, of course, researching, and when we're going through the newspapers, say of the 40s, it's typical to see it where John James, Negro, committed this crime. But if John James is white, it just says John James committed this crime. So it brings up a whole different image. And, oh, you know, when the earlier caller talked about Boogeyman, definitely brings that up. And I think you're seeing the same thing in those images that she's talking about. It's shaping us and making us want to think that way versus, oh, wait a minute, there's plenty of good people out there. Why are you so afraid?
How do images come to be viewed in the modern context with constant information 24/7 just on a news feed coming through the pipes at all times of the hour? Does it dilute the message? For instance, we don't see the bodies of people from Afghanistan, soldiers that served in Afghanistan and Iraq, as we saw in Vietnam. We will not see autopsy of Trayvon Martin. We will not see that. Yet we have more information coming down the pipeline than we ever have in human history. How do you juxtapose what we see in this exhibit to the media culture now?
I think it's a difficult balance, and I think there's an argument that can be made within how a project like For All the World to See presents these images, that there's a certain depth to kind of a more expansive print coverage than, especially now. I mean, the way media images appear so quickly on stations where there is a lot of polarized content, that you've got that agenda behind you and it's boom, 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 the images are there and gone. I think it makes an argument for a more kind of considered reading of it and the value of the information behind it, that it's not just about the image itself. While the image is powerful and the images clearly speak with a level of, as Jennifer had said, emotion that the print alone doesn't get, it's also about the image, the information that backs up that image.
And the images have more of an agenda these days with social media.
Oh, most definitely. I think, you know, everybody has a perspective. If they present their perspective, that's going to be an individual idea. And I do think that images are diluted. You know, we have 24/7 news feeds. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have, you know, if it's words or images, I think society can become jaded because of the amount of information that we are constantly given. You know, I'm definitely of the generation of a social networker. And, you know, I check my MSNBC and, you know, I check the news headlines and, but checking a headline doesn't give you the full perspective. And I think we now live in a society where we go by headlines and bullet lines and photo lines and everything is just very concise and we don't get the full perspective.
And I think we're so used to just bombardment with images and also a much more ready access to moving images. I think one of the things that it's difficult for us now, Patricia was saying, don't go in with modern eyes. And I do think one of the things that is difficult for us to walk into an exhibition like this and look at that television footage of Birmingham and the March on Washington and be able to separate our culture from where I can turn on my computer and watch something in 2 minutes to a time when it was a lot rare for people to see moving images like that at all, much less coming into their home on their TV in the living room. So I think the way we simply react to them and tune them out has changed, because the more used you are to something, the less of an impact it has on you.
And tell us about the dynamics of this traveling exhibit. You can host it for relatively cheap, it seems. Tell us about the dynamics of how this traveling exhibit will work.
This is part of a project, a program called NEH on the Road. It indeed, there's a $1,000 rental fee that is a part of the initial booking, but compared to an exhibition, say, like the Titanic at Union Station, that's a very, very minimal fee. There's also some shipping charges involved, but venues can book this project. They bring it in for 7 weeks. Along with that, they get help with programming support. They get press releases, they get media coverage, they get brochures, they get everything with it that is needed to make it a success in their community, along with customer support and any kind of troubleshooting and questions they might have. It's designed so that a site can put most of it up themselves. There are installation instructions that come with it. I said before, in one sense, almost like an IKEA version of something, where literally it's designed so that you should be able to bring it into your site and put the pieces up and then take them down. And there's instructions for how you put them back in the box and ship them to the next location.
But you guys don't show up with annoying blue shirts.
We don't show up with annoying blue shirts.
I did tell her she needed to, like, box herself and go with it so that whoever the next venue was would have all the great resources.
There would actually be some enjoyment in that.
This will be traveling through 2017. Where are some of the next stops? Will we see this exhibit on this side of the border?
We will also at some point be seeing the exhibit on this side of the border. It will be appearing at William Jewell College. I believe that's next year, 2013. It's also going to other venues throughout the country. That ranges from a site in Tunica, Mississippi, West Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Everywhere from that to, I'm trying to think now, I was confusing that with another show, to a place in Pennsylvania, all over the place.
And how long will it be here at Wyandotte County Museum?
It is at our site until May 25th. And then we have decided as staff, our local component that we did in collaboration with For All the World to See will become a part of our permanent exhibition. So that will always be in our East Gallery to showcase the local Wyandotte County African-American history that we have.
Wow. And what led to that decision, making it a permanent part, making it a local part, a permanent part of the exhibit?
Personally, I think that... that is a needed perspective that has been void, for lack of a better word, in our museum. And so, you know, as staff, we're able to, you know, kind of make those decisions. And I think it is important to present multiple perspectives, multiple cultures. Wyandotte County has such a rich culture from different communities and ethnicities. And, you know, a lot of the materials that have previously been presented in the museum, we look at a lot of the the Native American perspective, but also the white perspective. And then there was just this void, in my opinion. So we decided to make it a permanent part of the collection.
We should note that East Gallery is very fun. It has the old fire engine.
Yes.
And allows you to dress up in
bonnets. Yes, you can put on a fire helmet
and
a jacket.
And
yes.
Jackets and pose for pictures and exactly. Go around while you look.
Yes. Tag us on Facebook as you take a picture.
Right.
Yep. One of the things I'd like to kind of comment about real quick, too, is that in bringing this exhibit, it's been a collaboration for some time for us, like she was saying, to find a way to bring other communities and other ethnicities into our museum. And one of the things that came forward was Mayor Joe Reardon asking us to do this in a bigger scale that would allow us to scale this down.
Our guests are Leslie Zabilic, Creative Director of the Mid-America Arts Alliance, and with her is Wyandotte County Historical Museum representatives Patricia Schurkamp and the curator Jennifer Laughlin. Thank you very much. We've been discussing For All the World to See, visual culture and the struggle for civil rights, up now at the Wyandotte County Museum. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow when our series on the search for recreational water continues with a look at local lakes and rivers. As part of this series, we continue our May photo contest. We want to know, Kansas City, where do you go to be around water in the city or the metro area and its environs? Email your photos to centralstandard@kcur.org. KCUR staffers will determine the winner, and we'll hook the winner up with some KCUR swag, and you'll be a big deal on something called the internet. Our show is produced by Andres Lindsay with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with National Geographic Explorer Myra Mayer. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.